everybody can actually, can't eat here.
She can order. I know the owner. You have a copy of the coupon for everybody? The press?
The press release. I just have
Mario.
I have 20 copies.
Of the press release and not the complaint?
I got the press release. What about the complaint?
I have the complaint, but I didn't make
copies. I'll give you my copy. I'll give you my copy. That's fine. If I can't remember something, I might grab it back from you.
Okay. This is all one thing?
Okay.
That's one copy.
Here's the complaint. Here are the attachments. And then on the back, there's a city form and the press release and some other stuff.
But, okay, yes.
Okay, here's the...
Fred's going to give me his.
Yeah, I am. Okay, hold on. I'll put it...
What about the other members of the press?
I'll talk to them later.
Here. Here. Again, the letter, the form of the city, the complaint, and the attachments.
Okay, I have press releases here just in case any of you would like to read this stuff as we're going along. It already has me quoted. I haven't said it yet. Don't worry. Don't distract me.
We'll have to vote on it again if you change the words. We'll have to postpone to next month. Don't change any of the words.
Oh my God.
Let's go.
Okay. So, hello everybody. This is a press conference, and thank goodness there's no TV camera here. It's just the written word, which is better. My name is Mary Engel, and I'm the Austin Neighborhoods Council President. I've filed an ethics complaint on my own behalf with the City's of Austin's Ethics Review Commission against a member of the City's Land Development Code Advisory Committee. The complaint alleges Melissa Nesland is an unregistered lobbyist, which is a violation of the city code, and that she should be barred from serving on this advisory committee. That will influence the revision of the land development code, the Code Next process. That committee is charged with outreach to the community. Their influence is great, particularly since they are able to create resolutions and vote to support city documents prepared by the consultant team Opticos. I would like to stress that this is not a personal issue with this member of the advisory committee. I feel compelled to speak out because this committee is participating in a tainted process. Tainted processes reflect badly upon our community values. Moreover, our current code, laws, and rules apply to all of us. This is a single example of a greater problem with the City of Austin and its procedures and processes. By filing this complaint, I'm trying to signal what is symptomatically wrong with our city's land planning and development processes. The Land Development Code Advisory Committee was appointed by the City Council and the City Manager. The composition of this group is almost exclusively members from the real estate industry, with exclusion of other citizens, particularly neighborhood advocates. Only one of the 11 members is speaking for neighborhood interests. Other members of this committee have financial ties to the real estate industry or motives to please the city staff. I think I can safely say that the real estate industry shares my lack of confidence in the City of Austin's Planning and Development Review Department. The bottom line is that this exclusionary group will produce undue biased influence on the new code product. Why would any of this actually matter? Undue influence of developer financial interests can be linked to the root cause of many of our community's problems. Don't worry, it's only two more paragraphs.
You're doing fine.
Our city is growing and is in a state of constant change right now. Our older urban core neighborhoods are grappling with all sorts of problems and issues, many of them related to gentrification, affordability, and higher property taxes. Profit-driven developers who have received the okay from the city staff to demolish existing affordable homes and to replace them with much less affordable new structures are radically transforming our neighborhoods. Instead of creating more affordability with increased density, the reverse is happening. Higher property taxes are displacing families. Higher property taxes are actually driving ordinary citizens to the suburbs or out of the city. We can do a better job. This current process to revise our land development code is flawed. The data gathering process is statistically invalid, and those few people, relatively few people, who have given input have been excluded from commenting on the data compilation. This is a bad start for a process that will affect the lives of generations of ordinary citizens. Our laws should be enforced. An investigation of business relationships of other members of the Citizens Advisory Committee should commence. It is time for ordinary citizens to wake up. The Citizens Advisory Committee and city staff are advocating changes in our neighborhoods, including possible radical zoning changes. Our land development code needs updating, but not in this way. We need to go back to the drawing board and get this right. I have two other speakers here who will speak very briefly, and then we'll have a note from the Legal Eagle.
Okay, thank you. I'm Daniel Yanis, and I live in Govalley Johnson Terrace, and I'm Sector 6 representative to the Austin Neighborhoods Council. All of us here around the table are from every part of town supporting this complaint. I'd like to say that the Land Development Code Citizens Advisory Committee was flawed from the beginning. The entire way that this committee was put together was very surprising to me and questionable, and that's why we're here today. I'll say that Opticos, the consultant, has Austin Neighborhoods Council and the Austin Neighborhoods as first on their list of stakeholders in this process, and yet, as Mary said, out of 11, there's only one neighborhood advocate. And the way that those other committee members got on to that committee is very, very questionable to me. The process needs to be restructured to include all stakeholders, not just those who profit from development. Very alarming is to go to these committee meetings and hear rhetoric like that they want to do away with the tree ordinance, that they want to do away with single-family zoning and setbacks. They want to do away with compatibility standards. These are the very things that hold together what we call neighborhoods. And everybody that's coming to Austin comes to Austin because of the beautiful neighborhoods that we have. And this process is flawed, needs to be redone. Thank you.
My name is David King, and I am the second vice president of ANC, and I live in the Zilker neighborhood. And the decisions by the Land Development Code Citizens Advisory Group will affect every person, every business, every neighborhood, and every property in Austin. Close to $100 billion in property values is at stake. It's all about the money, not about neighborhoods. the rights of residents to protect and preserve the character, livability, and affordability of their own neighborhoods is also at stake. Our neighborhoods should not be for sale to the moneyed interests that only want to make big bucks and don't care about hardworking, low- and middle-income families who are being pushed out of Austin. The Citizens Advisory Group must be above reproach and free of conflicts of interest. Thank you.
I'm going to stand up so you can all see me. I'm Fred Lewis. I'm a longtime attorney here. I have a long background and expertise in ethics and conflict at the state and at the local level. I'm Mary Ingalls, pro bono lawyer, which means free. Hopefully the value of those services is better than free. Basically, I'm going to be very short. If the press has any specific questions about the law, I'm going to answer. Mary can talk about the impact of this and the other folks, neighborhood folks. Basically, the city, when it set up the Land Development Code Advisory Committee, put in the resolution a provision that said that no lobbyist can serve on the committee. That actually is a standard provision in Austin that applies to almost all committees, but it was expressly applied to this committee. It also made clear that it didn't matter whether or not you were registered as a lobbyist. What mattered is that you were a lobbyist as defined by the city code. And essentially, you're defined as a lobbyist under the city code, and I laid it out in the complaint. Basically, if you're trying to influence the government and you are either paid or compensated more than $200 in a quarter, which is a fairly low threshold because we want to have transparent government and make sure that the lobbyists are inside the system and reporting. The purpose of the lobbyist prohibition is really a conflict of interest provision. Okay? It is a prophylactic conflict of interest provision. What it's saying is a lobbyist, because they represent people in front of the government for pay, that they have clients, and therefore there's an inherent conflict of interest between them serving on the committee and serving the public interest, and they're serving on the committee and being paid by their clients. So it is a prophylactic rule that really is a conflict of interest rule. As Mary said, first of all, it is the law in the city of Austin, in this case and generally, that lobbyists shouldn't serve on our committee. In this instance, the person did not register. However, if you look at the evidence in the complaint, I think it's on the third page, you will see that she admits on her own LinkedIn profile on the webpage that she influences government, that she tracks ordinances and legislation. So we believe there's a reasonable basis for the belief that she is a lobbyist and should have registered and cannot serve on the commission. So we have asked the Austin Ethics Review Commission to consider it, to hear the evidence, take evidence, and recommend that she's a lobbyist and should be removed from the committee. And that's it.
Have any questions?
Well, I haven't been able to see an actual copy of the complaint, so I don't know what
happened. I can't hear her.
She has to complain. Here's a copy of it without the. I'm sorry, I didn't. We didn't. Mary needs to get you.
I had to file it this morning so that it wouldn't go viral before this press conference. So I can actually email you a copy. Anybody wants one later?
Basically, the evidence is that if you look on the city council's agendas, she is representing developers in a number of instances in front of the city council. And you got to realize these are public acknowledgments of representation. There's, I'm sure, many more that are not reflected in the web document. And she defines herself, well, let me back up. Her employer makes it very clear that part of their job responsibilities and work responsibilities are to influence stakeholders in the development process and make them come along. That's a pretty euphemistic way of saying lobbyists. She works for them, and on her LinkedIn page, which is her word, not mine, she makes it very clear that she is trying to influence governmental bodies, such as the City of Austin, and that she tracks and tries to influence legislation and ordinances. I think it is reasonable to believe that when she says that she does that, there's a reasonable basis to believe she is perhaps a lobbyist and that she should register. A $200 a quarter threshold is very low. That's not many hours. And when you lobby, let me be very clear. The lobbying statute is clear. It's not just directly when you lobby the council or a commission. It's also your preparation time to lobby. It's your background time, because it's all part of the lobbying process. So when you look at the available, easily available public information, it strongly suggests that she is a lobbyist, albeit unregistered. And frankly, the City of Austin, for some reason, we've had a lobbyist registration law for a long time, but for some reason, a lot of people that most human beings would say are lobbyists and that the law considers a lobbyist just don't register.
Fred, I have a question.
Sure. Yes.
Isn't there a provision to be on this citizen advisory group that the city asks for conflict of interest disclosure? And I think There is a provision that they're supposed to sign something that says they are not in a conflict of interest, and that was not done for the citizen advisory group. I think that's a really interesting issue.
The city did say that its guidelines for conflicts of interest would apply to the commission members. I don't know if they signed it. One of the advantages of a lobbyist prohibition is that if you're a lobbyist, you cannot serve, regardless of whether or not you can see your own conflicts of interest. People are not very good at understanding that they may be conflicted. People are much better at seeing their own other people's conflicts of interest than their own. And that's whether at the state or the local level, I've seen it repeatedly. People somehow or other think that because it's them, that the conflict of interest doesn't apply or it doesn't matter, which, frankly, it does matter. And even if they were somehow above their own biases and conflicts, the appearance is just as important because it destroys the public's faith in the process.
I actually wanted to say one comment to you from SOS. You may not think that this affects you at all or the environmental community, but it does. This committee will decide and determine what goes on over the aquifer. And this is very critical, and that's why we invited you to be here. So I just wanted to make sure that you didn't think you were wasting your time, and because this is a little bit in the nitty-gritty of the process and all that. I just wanted to point that out.
Sir, Councilor.
Yes?
Who appointed this individual to the committee?
I don't know. Was it Councilmember Spellman?
Yes.
All right. He's an intelligent individual. He knows her background. So my point is, in the past, her response, her duties, her vocation has been what? What has she done in the past?
She describes her.
Give it to me.
I don't remember. I'm going to give her.
Is that if this is what she's done in the past, what would be their rationale for putting her on this committee, not knowing that she would be perceived as a lobby? So they know what they were doing. Having said that, what I would like to know is, what is our recourse other than talking? What is our recourse?
Well,
look,
I don't know what their motives are. I don't know what they know or don't know.
Well, that's rhetorical. I mean, but my point is, can we stop it?
Well, the answer is yes. Okay, we filed a complaint with the Ethics Review Commission. They were given enhanced authority in 2013. They expressly have jurisdiction over the lobbyist prohibition. Okay?
They
are given a short period of time. I think it's 20 days. It might be 15 to have a preliminary hearing. So, considering the importance of this, they need to call a hearing quickly and take evidence and decide, based on the evidence in front of them, whether or not she is a lobbyist and should be removed.
I know they're telling me to let you finish, but, you know, that's really...
That's okay.
The point being, the Ethics Committee can take... They have 30 days or thereabouts. They can take their own sweet time in reference to reviewing this.
There are requirements on of them doing it diligently, but I don't know how they intend to proceed. It's in front of them now.
And the person that's on the committee, until such time as she's told to cease or desist, she can continue to function in that capacity.
That is correct.
Okay, so what I'm saying, there's no other means of having her to cease acting until a ruling has been written.
That's right.
Yes.
This is, in our belief, the most effective way to remove her from the commission.
We have to follow the process.
I understand.
Right. Follow the process.
She could resign and save the commission and everyone the process and the time and energy.
This is why we never win.
No. We will.
Go ahead, Steve. Go ahead, Steve.
I was just going to say, I really appreciate what you're doing here. This is great. And it just more or less backs up all our suspicions based on attending the code development meetings that have been held and their public meetings, that one of the primary goals of this entire thing is to do away and abolish the neighborhood plans and to either weaken them to the point where they really don't exist, or to, in my opinion, what their really goal is to get rid of them entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And with compatibility standards, the single family zoning, the continued push for density on every vacant lot in the city. And I think they're not going to be happy until they get rid of the neighborhood plans and the concept of it. And I think it's a primary push of Mark Ott and five of the members of the council. And I think we should not lose sight of what's really behind this. I also think it shows just how bold they are, that they would appoint somebody who every one of us considers a paying lobbyist, just right there throws it out. I mean, it's nothing to get in here. Everybody knows what we're looking at here, and yet they do it anyway, hoping we won't say a word.
We actually had a press conference, if you do recall, about a year and a half ago, where Councilmember Spellman said he was going to put in the resolution that he could appoint lobbyists,
mm-hmm.
or the council could appoint lobbyists to this group. And there was such a loud outcry with Councilmember Morrison's office, Councilmember Tovo's office, and a bunch of other group leaders and us, that he backed off of that. He actually backed down
from putting
that in the resolution. And then what did he do? He appointed a lobbyist. He did it anyway. So voila, it's business as usual. You say one thing and you do another.
And I also feel that this is the first step, because, like I said in my early remarks, the entire way that this committee was formed is extremely questionable. The fact that the city manager, who is an employee, not an elected official, participates in placing appointments on a policy-making board is not good government. flat out not good government, and we need to look into that. And the unfortunate thing beyond that is that the city council went along with it.
And where are the checks and balances?
There aren't.
Where
with
are
this
checks
city
and
council.
Balances on these commissions? There's a process, and it's not being followed. No one's being held accountable. How can these guys get on there? Where are the checks and balances? Gilbert?
One of the things that the city staff has said is that you referenced the neighborhood plans or the neighborhood contact teams, many of them all over the city. These neighborhoods that have drawn up the plans of what they would like to do in their neighborhood. Staff has told us that we've had two meetings with city with code next people in this building here, and they have basically said those contact team plans and so forth are so mismatched, so disorganized, that it is hard for us to be able to do anything with them according to the current land development code as it is. And one of the goals is to develop code next and then make the contact teams and all of those plans compatible to the code, which again means that they're not living up to the obligation to the promise that they made that they would respect the plans. They are preparing to basically dump every plan that's out there to make it meet the code next, the next code that they come up with. And you're right, they, one of the things that Jerry always says is if there's something not specific on any ordinance or the code, we always assume that it is allowable.
That's right. It's not what the words in the document, it's the words that are not in the
document. In other words, if I have in East Austin, I live in East Austin, if I have a little, small little house, and it doesn't specifically say on the code that they can build a multifamily complex next door to a single family residential, they can, they assume that they can because it doesn't specify that they can. So that's the way they operate. And that's the way we see things happening throughout the city. We see incompatible structures being put up around single family homes. And it's personal with the way it is today, and it's gonna get worse. We live here in the central city, in the Rosewood neighborhood. In 2000, our home was worth $69,000 according to TCAT. In 2014, it's $350,000.
Same house.
Same house.
Same.
No change. A 1,500 square foot home in East Austin.
Just maintenance, huh?
Just maintenance.
That's what you get for publishing a book.
Which is made of
the
maintenance.
It's just
honest. Yeah. We're very wealthy. We've got $40 in residual.
Press first. Okay.
But that's important for people to understand that the code is being made. In other words, they're putting the cart before the horse here. Mm-hmm. They're developing the code and then going to go to each neighborhood and force you to comply because that's the new code. Yeah.
So I just want to ask our guests who are here, our dear guests, are there other questions you would like to ask us before we start, before we actually participate in kind of a round table?
Most of my questions have been asked. I have just a private question.
Elizabeth, any? Okay.
I can't hear her. I don't know who she is or what she is.
She said if she has some questions, she'll do it later.
Yes.
Yeah. Same here.
And Adam? No. Okay. Susanna and
yeah.
Vera?
Well, I'm really concerned because, you know, in the 90s we worked for the East Austin Overlay. And the East Austin Overlay actually gave us that right to begin to talk to developers when they came into our community. Before, we were never notified that they could do whatever the hell they wanted. And that gave us the opportunity. The next step was then the contact teams, the neighborhood plan process. And so those tools have been very important, at least for East Austin, because now we have developers that have to come to us, and they either have to compromise or they have to fight us, you know, on that whole issue of whether we're in agreement with the zoning change or not. and that has really empowered our community. But we're constantly being challenged, or we always say we get our neighborhoods trumped, like the East Riverside Corridor.
Subverted.
The East Riverside Corridor, when we said, wait a minute, this did not come before the Montapas Neighborhood Plan contacting, you're about to change the zoning on our corridor, and they say, well, it's a master plan. It trumps your neighborhood plan. We don't have to meet with the contact team to get your approval on the zoning change that is happening here. And so now we see the code next coming in, and the code next mm-hmm. is the most frightening thing to us, because what little power the community had in regulating, because when the neighborhood plans came in, I don't know if you all remember, the city did away with the East Austin overlay. And we said, no, you shouldn't do away with it. And they say, no, because we got a new process coming in, which was the neighborhood plan. And we said, those are going to take years to be approved. And it did, you know. And now we're talking about the code next and how the city had not even adopted. I can give you an example. The city had not even adopted East Riverside Corridor plan when we had a zoning change that came up before them. And we were trying to put affordable housing in Montapas with the Cesar Chavez Foundation. And the city was bulking because they wanted high density alone. And I said, wait a minute, the East Riverside Corridor at this time is a guide. It has not been adopted by the city. So why are you using the guide as a law? And so that really scares me with Code Next. We're already beginning to see what's coming down, and they began to use these guides before they even adopted. And I think they're really fast-tracking before the next council gets in place. They're really trying to make the changes before they know that there's going to be community representatives on the 10-1 from all over, and people are going to be asking some really tough questions about their neighborhoods.
So the first thing that all of y'all are going to have to do when you get elected is undo Code Next. Just throw it out and go back to the original.
No.
Vera, did you have something to say?
I just wanted to know, unlike Art, I don't, for years, all we've done is to talk, and people have done things to us on the east side. And now it's time for us on the east side. And I know everybody from all over Austin is in this room around this table, but the most gentrification that has taken place is where I live and grew up. Now, my next question is, what are we going to do then? When are we going to stop it? Besides just
well, this is, yeah, and this